there. Welcome to Simple Acts, Big Impact, celebrating teen changemakers. I'm your host, Natalie Silverstein. I'm an author, philanthropist, and passionate advocate for family and youth service. On this short weekly pod, I have the honor of meeting tweens, teens, and young adults who are volunteers, advocates, nonprofit founders, activists, and fundraisers. My goal is to celebrate and amplify these big-hearted people and the work they're doing, and to inspire you all, no matter your age, to find your purpose and passion through meaningful service to others. I firmly believe, and these conversations will convince you, that every person can make a difference, one simple act at a time. As kids and teens continue to settle back into school routines, my guest today explores a very important topic in the educational space, research. Grace L. found a passion for research as a 10-year-old, and she wanted to share her skills to support other aspiring young researchers, especially youth from underrepresented communities. She created Research to Empower, which offers a masterclass, a published guidebook, and online resources, all free of charge. Welcome back, everybody. I am super excited to introduce you to Grace today. She is going to tell us all about her organization, Research to Empower. Hey, Grace, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for being with us today. So start with a little introduction and then tell us all about Research to Empower. Start from the very beginning, the inspiration. Tell us everything.
Yeah, of course. First of all, I'm really honored to be on this podcast, and I'm super excited. So I'm Grace Liu. I live in Syosset, New York, and I go to Syosset High School. I am a rising junior, and I founded Research to Empower, which is a student-led nonprofit a couple years ago. And our mission is to inspire, support, and empower young aspiring researchers to do research in a fun and engaging way. And so I was really inspired by my own research journey when I was founding Research to Empower, because I'm a student researcher myself. And I started out research a little bit earlier when I was around 10 years old. And there was just, I was self-learning how to research. And when I was looking online, I was searching through all the websites and organizations and programs, and I just couldn't find one that, number one, was cost-free. It didn't cost like thousands or tens of thousands of dollars. Number two, it didn't have an age limitation. Most of them were only for high schoolers, and I wasn't in high school at that time. And number three, the ones that were free and didn't have an age limitation were extremely selective, and I knew I wouldn't be able to get in since I had no prior research experience. And so by identifying these challenges that I face, and a lot of my peers today still face when learning how to do research, whether it's from finding a mentor or just not knowing where to start and how to start, I founded Research to Empower to address this issue. And our core initiatives include an online masterclass. We do workshops and talks. We also have a guidebook and an online platform of research resources that are cost-free. And it's ultimately just to try and curate this community that's kind and supportive and cares a lot about research and has the spirit of trying to innovate, trying to critically think and problem solve.
Oh, that's amazing. So first of all, when you're talking about research and online resources and things, you're talking about sort of the Nexus, Lexis world, like these things that are software packages, things that I used to use when I was in graduate school, which are probably all gone now. But and to your point that they're exclusive, right, where you have to pay or you have to be a certain age or whatever. So this is research in any topic, right? This is if you're researching something in science or in history, right? Is that kind of, so if you're writing a research paper, essentially. Well, you started when you were 10, which is sort of amazing. Not many 10-year-olds are assigned papers that require that level of research, but you were sort of just curious on your own. Is that what happened?
Exactly. So my own personal research story, it kind of started out with my experiences as a female fencer. So at the time, I really loved fencing. It was actually the first sport that I ever fell in love with. And throughout my whole life, I was just this like couch potato bookworm who just wanted to stay inside all day. And it drove my parents nuts. So when I finally found fencing, they were so happy for me, super supportive. And I started just having my own observations and being curious about this thing that I was so passionate about. And on top of that, in one of my classes called Project Beyond, my teacher there was the advisor for this competition called National History Day that involves a lot of research. And this teacher was really supportive. And in this journey, essentially, it was a combination of, you know, one teacher being really supportive and me having this desire to learn more about this topic. The history of women's fencing was my first research paper. So learn more about this topic that I was so passionate about and that I couldn't really get answers with like the teachers at school because it's so like out of the curriculum and I did my own research on it.
Right. And you know, you're raising a really good point that I think everyone says, oh, just do some research online, right? And what do you end up getting? You get like Wikipedia, which as you know, is like people change Wikipedia themselves. Like it's not the definitive resource, right? Like it is hard to find actual verifiable facts online. And, you know, and especially if you're very young, like if no one's teaching you how to do this, these are academic skills, right? That they don't necessarily teach us in school, unfortunately. And, you know, back in the old days, you would go to the library and the librarian would help you find books on this and you would pull the books out or microfilm or microfiche. I mean, these are words I'm using that you've probably never even heard of, but these are, you know, this is how we would find old newspaper articles and things. But now there's this assumption that all of this information is just on the web and you can just go on there and get it for free and easily. But it is a rabbit hole kind of situation. And now in high school, of course, you are being asked to research different topics for papers. And importantly, now with AI and everything else, you are actually being asked to make sure that you're citing it correctly. So I'm sort of curious, are you also in your master classes and your guidebooks and stuff, are you teaching kids how to properly cite? Because I do think that that's a really big thing. And my daughter, who's also a rising junior in high school, you know, when she writes a paper and the annotation piece and the citation piece is so, so important and you're going to get a lot of points taken off. And I don't think that they teach that very well in school. So is that part of it as well?
Definitely. Absolutely. Because citation is such a huge part of research ethics in general as well. The ethics of, you know, crediting someone and crediting some researcher for the hard work that they deserve. So that's a crucial part of the master classes that I teach. And you raised a really good point about, you know, the kind of difficulty of starting out research because even though like online you have access to, you know, the world is at your fingertips and you can just search up anything and then get a bunch of information, it can be really difficult to decipher what's a credible source, what's not. And having to do that comparison between, you know, multiple sources, and even in academia, you know, researchers are having debates and conversations about, you know, concepts and theories all the time. And there's a lot of the times not one definitive answer, and I think that's part of the beauty of research, is the process of exploring and trying to get to your own version of the answer of how you interpret this question or challenge, because there's so many ways to do something or approach something, and it can be really difficult because, you know, a lot of times we may be taught in school, you know, there's just one answer to this question, and then this is the facts, and you just have to memorize it. When in research, that's just completely not the case, where you have to be creative in your approach and creative in your questioning of the knowledge that you're reading.
Well, and you really raised a good point there about the sort of the nuance of this is what is the question that you're asking the research to answer, right? And if you have to be really clear on what the question is, and then you're going to find all kinds of research that either support the answer that you're looking for or that don't support the answer that you're looking for, and you have to be able to interpret that. I just really love this, Grace. I think that it's super important for kids to know how to do this. And I do think it's a lost art because of this. Now everything, as you said, is at your fingertips, and yet it's really not. So how do you see this growing? Do you offer all of this for free? Do you do any fundraising around this work? You know, how does it actually work? And then how do you get this out into the world? How do you tell people that this is available for them?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, and I do want to kind of shift towards a more, you know, positive light, because yes, this, it is a huge issue with like misinformation and you know, lack of critical thinking and problem solving being taught, and just lack of research courses in schools and the education system. But there is like a definitely a growing demand from students to learn how to research, because it's being seen as more and more valuable. You can see with all of the, you know, competitive science competitions, how many people are competing in those every year. It's just more and more people, and it's really wonderful. So that's something that I wanted to bring up. And as for your question, so Research to Empower, yes, our like masterclass and the online resources and our platform that we provide, we make it cost free. And the way that we reach out to people is during the process of launching Research to Empower, I knew that, you know, a lot of students, you know, from a student perspective, look for volunteer hour opportunities. And so one of the first things I did after making sure, establishing Research to Empower as a nonprofit, getting the nonprofit status, is I registered to become a Presidential Volunteer Service Award certifying organization. And I also launched a student ambassador program. So any student can just go onto our website and fill in a super, super short form that will take only like a minute long, and just become like a Research to Empower ambassador. So that's one way that students can engage with us. And it's also a way that kind of ensures the sustainability of Research to Empower, that we have student volunteers that, you know, not only is benefiting from the experience that we kind of provide when they kind of support us and help, you know, work for us, but also we you know, try to give these student volunteers volunteer hours. In addition to that, yes, we also do fundraising. And we've already secured funding and support from organizations like Riley's Way Foundation, which is, you know, what we, how we were connected in the first place. And also the National Youth Leadership Council, Google, Microsoft, and Bill of Rights Institute. Like, those are our huge supporters, Research to Empower's huge supporters. And to date, we've actually collaborated now with 42 organizations internationally and impacted over 120,000 people. That includes students, educators, parents, and that's across 141 countries. So it's really amazing, and I'm super proud of the progress and impact we've been able to make, starting up, you know, as a small nonprofit that gained almost no traction, to something that our website gets, you know, tons and tons of students who are, you know, registered for our course and completing it and then leaving, you know, good like 5-star reviews and stuff like that. So it's really exciting.
That's amazing. Yeah, no, absolutely. That's an incredible amount of reach. I mean, you are offering such an incredibly important service for students, and one, again, that sadly our educational system, I think, does not provide to the level that it needs to. And as kids, as you know, you're going into your junior year, you're going to start looking at colleges, and senior year, you're applying to colleges. You know, when you're in college, you are really expected to know how to do good research and to know how to cite the research and to, you know, as in terms of that ethical question that you raised earlier, if you don't cite correctly, you can get into a lot of trouble. You can certainly flunk a class and worse. So, and as you know, many people publish things and don't cite the right sources, and then they're sued. I mean, this has a lot of ramifications, right? And the fact that we don't teach young people the right research skills, and the fact that you've kind of created this to fill that gap, is super important and impressive. Wow, Grace. Well, I love that you found a passion for research, which is such a funny thing for a young person to find a passion for at such a young age, but you've turned it into something that is just providing an incredible resource for so many others. Can you tell everybody where they can learn more? Your website, obviously. Becoming an ambassador is an incredible idea. I love when young people have a great concept and they offer ambassador roles, because then that just automatically is going to make it spread all over the place, which is so great and allows everyone to get involved. So your website, your social media handles, ways to get in touch, all that good stuff.
Yeah, of course. So our website, besides the ambassador program and our, you know, online masterclass, we also have recently opened up, you know, applications for leadership positions where you really get to lead, for example, like a team of volunteers and actively promote research education within your community. So to the listeners out there, you're super welcome to apply for that. And we also are looking for contributors and volunteers for writing our monthly blog posts. So that's another way. And then, of course, like you mentioned, the social media handles. We have Instagram, LinkedIn, just search up Research to Empower.
And the website is researchtoempower.org. Awesome. Amazing, Grace. Thank you so much. This was really interesting and super important. And I can't wait to share this with and sort of in the back to school season, because I think everyone will be really interested in this information. I'm wishing you the best of luck this school year and beyond. I know you don't need it, because I think you're going to just do amazing work. I can't wait to see all of the good things that you're going to do. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening. If you were inspired by what you heard today, please follow, rate, and review. These things really matter. And if you know a tween or a teen who is doing great things in his, her, or their community, send them my way. I'd love to meet them and share their stories with a world that could really use a dose of inspiration right about now. You can get in touch with me through my website, simpleactsguide.com. Until next time, remember to keep eyes, ears, hearts, and minds open to the needs of others. And always, be kind.